to Fresh Wellness with Lisa Shebeck, and welcome to my podcast. A homeopath by trade, with the aim of helping you discover health, natural living, and alternative therapies to bring you down the rabbit hole.
That's good.
In this episode of Fresh Wellness with Lisa Shebeck, I'm delighted to speak to Mickey Ettore, a cranial sacral therapist and Reiki master. Mickey is an absolute powerhouse of a woman. She not only survived every mother's worst nightmare, but came out of it stronger and is a true inspiration and warrior mum. Mickey talks through her journey and how her then 18-month-old daughter was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and was given a 20% chance of survival. Conventional medical treatment was complemented with good nutrition, homeopathy, Reiki, cranial sacral therapy, and her daughter is now a very happy and healthy 17-year-old girl. Mickey's son was diagnosed with autism at 18 months and he had chronic gut dysfunction, seizures, severe allergic reactions, slept for 5 hours a night, a severely compromised immune system, OCD and PANDAS. Thanks mainly to homeopathy, Reiki, cranial sacral therapy and sunrise, he's now a very loving, happy and sociable boy. Mickey's children's health problems are the reason why she studied to become a Reiki master and cranial sacral therapist. Both have improved all their lives in ways Mickey could never have imagined possible. It was a pleasure to chat to Mickey and her journey to her life-changing career.
Thank you for being on. I wanted to chat to you for ages, Mickey. And can you tell me a bit more about what you actually do?
Okay, so I'm a Reiki master and a cranial sacral therapist. I actually left a PR and marketing job about 7 years ago now. To do this full time. And I must admit, I was quite, at the time, it was quite a scary thing to do because I'm a single mum, I've got 2 kids, one on the spectrum. And it was a big deal for me to leave a very well-paid job that was really tailored for me. My boss was amazing. Because I was a mum and knew I had some with autism. I was only working 3 days a week and really good hours and stuff and a steady income. There's quite a funny story behind it because I'll explain why I got into doing that because of the kids. But at the time when I was working at this place, it was interior design, so completely different to what I'm doing now. And my boss was really supportive of the fact that I was studying every weekend. So he'd always ask me, how's it going? And it's quite difficult, when you're working all weekend and I've got the kids, and then I was doing 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. really intense course of cranial sacral, learning about anatomy and pathology stuff that it's really hard when you're in your 40s to go back to being a student again, because
this story sounds very familiar, by the way, but so this is your story.
So I was doing that, and then when I finished, I was sort of trying to stay in the job and sort of get clients, and it just wasn't happening at all. Like, I just wasn't getting anything. And then my boss kept saying to me, "Oh, are you sure you don't want to do that?" And I was going, "No, no." Then really bizarrely, how strange things happen in life. So a friend of mine that I hadn't seen for 20 years from school, she was living in Portugal. We reconnected on Facebook. So she said, "Oh, you've got to come out to Portugal and meet this guru guy. He does past life regression." I was like, "All right, then." So I did it. And kids were with their dad. And I did this thing. And she said, "It will change your life," right? So I get back and I go back to work, and things have been going really well at work. Yeah, I've just brought in a massive job and stuff like that. So my boss turned around and fired me. And I was like, literally, he was like, "I don't think you need to be here anymore, and your heart's not in it," and all this. And I was thinking, no, honestly, my heart is in it. I need to be. And it was panic because I just didn't want to lose that job. So he sort of gave me a second chance. He went, "All right, prove that your heart is still in it and you still want to work here." So I I did another 2 months. But what was happening, this is really mad, is like every day I was trying to get to work, something was happening to stop me from getting to work, I don't know, everything was conspiring against me. And one day, and I knew my boss was getting quite pissed off that, I already had a late start at 10 o'clock. So he was already giving me a lot of leeway. And one morning I was on the tube and they threw us off the tube and said, "Oh, you've all got to get off." So I jump in this taxi, black cab, and I say to him, "Come on, you need to get me to work on time." And the hilarious thing is this cab driver had an angel hanging on his mirror. And he just turned around to me and went, "Love, you know what the problem is? You're not following your bliss." And it was just so sweet that he just said, "The universe is conspiring against you to make you late because you shouldn't be there." And I was Oh, okay then. So I thought, do you know what? I'd had, weirdly, and I'll tell you this, it's another story, but I've had a lot of times when taxi drivers give me advice and I hadn't listened to it, right? So
okay, love it.
I'll tell you the other story in a minute. But so I was thinking, okay, I've got to follow this guy's advice. So I went in and I actually quit my job just before Christmas. About 7 years ago, I think. And my boss was like, see, I told you so, told you. And I actually thanked him a few years later. I sent him an email, I said, thank you. And because he had had cranial sacral therapy himself. So he was a fan of it because he's quite, he sort of work hard, play hard. And he's always done. So he had a heart attack and he ended up going to a cranial sacral therapist. And he said, it was really weird. This man just put his hand behind my heart and then I felt a lot better. And, you know, so I think he kind of recognized, he's quite old and wise, and he thought, I know this person doesn't need to be here doing interior design marketing, she needs to be doing this. So
it was a gift from the universe almost, but it's hard, isn't it, like making that leap of faith when you haven't necessarily got full clients and a full practice, and as you say, single mom, two kids, the steady income. Yeah, that's a big leap, isn't it?
It was scary. And I must admit, like come January, it's sort of Christmas passed and I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? So what I did was, thank God for Facebook sometimes, I went into Facebook and I was already in some groups as an autism mum. So there's so many groups on Facebook. And I just went in and was really honest. I said, look, I've just finished this course and I'd really like to, you know, do this for a living, anybody interested? And I couldn't believe it, literally it was like ping ping ping, like so many people replied back. I must have had 40 replies within seconds. Wow. And I think that is definitely the universe, you know. I think when you do follow your bliss, you know, like the taxi driver said, and you do what it is you're, you know, your calling, what you were made to do, then I think things just, you know, they just happen, you know, in a way that you know, everything just goes to plan, you know. And the mad thing is that I have been busy ever since. Like I've not had a single lull, even during the first lockdown when I thought, oh God, you know, like all my clients said, it's fine, we'll do distant healing.
That's amazing. You know what? I've got chills all over. And what's funny is almost every guest I have on my podcast says a similar thing, in that they follow the synchronicity. And if you do that, then it follows, success follows, but it's taking that leap of faith and just following the signs.
It's that leap of faith. And I'm seeing this, I'm sort of digressing, but I'm seeing it a lot in a lot of my friends who, you know, might be autism mummies or whatever. And they're seeing something, that like a gap in the market or something, you know, whether it's food related or homeopathy or whatever. Mm. And they're just deciding just to take that leap of faith and go with it. And all of them have been successful. I'm so proud of what they're doing. You know, one of my friends, she makes her own face creams, like really, really healthy. And she makes them out of food substances and stuff. And, you know, all of them are doing well, because I think when you do what you love, you're passionate for, and, you know, there's a reason, because you want it, because, you know, you've seen what's happened, say, to your children, you know, and I think you can't help but be successful, you know. So it is a leap of faith. It is scary, but I think you're rewarded.
You're right. And if you're acting out of joy and that authenticity and integrity, people feel that and they want that. So it's one of the most important things. I love it. So what got you into the cranial sacral therapy and Reiki? Can you tell me a bit more about
that? So both my children, something major happened, right? So, I mean, this is a long time ago. I've got over all the trauma of it and stuff. But so the first thing that happened was my daughter, who's now 17, and she's lovely, full of life and, you know, very sociable girl, doing extremely well, very healthy. In 2006, literally, I'd always had quite a sort of a you know, fairly sort of straightforward life, nothing really going wrong. And all of a sudden she was diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was a very rare form of cancer. So only 1 in 100 kids get it. And we were living in Dubai at the time, actually, me and my husband. And we'd come over to the UK and we'd gone to a toy shop in Blackheath, sort of where I live now. Mm-hmm. And she fell down the stairs. And then the next day, it was sort of Christmas time, she had a lump here and it was sort of starting to grow on her face. And I was thinking, what's that? But we went to the doctor and the doctor said, oh, I think it's one-sided. The GP said, I think it's one-sided mumps and you could go back to Dubai, it's fine. So I went back to Dubai and this lump just kept growing and growing. Mm-hmm. And I knew something was wrong. I could feel it, you know, when you just have this instinct. And so we ended up going to the doctor in Dubai. And I just found out I was pregnant. So I was quite emotional. I was in an emotional state anyway. And the doctor didn't have the best bedside manner. And he just kind of blurted out, "I think she's got cancer and you're going to have to go back to the UK or she'll die." I was like,
oh my God.
It was like, I still remember that day very clearly, like being kicked in the stomach. And she was tiny. She was a year and a half. But she was very chatty. And she kind of knew that the doctor had upset. She was like, mummy, I don't like this doctor. What's he said to you? You know, like, I don't like what he's saying. So we just literally just left Dubai. I never saw my house again. You know, I've been living there, you know, several years. So it was really odd just to kind of, you know, just, we just had to go. And then we came to the UK and she did tests and they said, yeah, she's stage 4 cancer, which, you know, is the later stage. You know, it's very, very aggressive form of cancer. They said she had 20% chance of being alive.
Oh my God.
So it was scary times. And being pregnant as well, you know, it was just crazy. I mean, I even considered termination at the time because, you know, it was something we discussed, you know, because I was thinking how I need to focus on my baby, you know. How can I be pregnant and going through this, you know? And we went through a very, very rigorous regime because they kind of take you under the wing and they say, right, we're going to do the chemotherapy, we're going to do the radiotherapy, we're going to do surgery. So there was a lot of things to sort of, you know, take into consideration. Mm. And overall, we basically spent my whole pregnancy, the whole 9 months was spent between sort of the Royal Marsden and then the local hospital. So Royal Marsden, Surrey, which were amazing, by the way. Like the Royal Marsden were incredible. They were really, the nurses there were incredible. You know, it was like everybody was really, really supportive. But it was just a really mad time. And I didn't, to be honest, I didn't know anything about alternative health or anything like that at that stage. You know, I was brought up, my parents, and they still are, my whole family, I'm like the black sheep of the family because they just don't get the alternative route I've gone down. But they're very much, you follow the doctor, you know, they love vaccines, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I'd always been of that kind of background. And the little introductions I got at the Royal Marsden were really interesting because one, there was a mum there who'd kind of traveled around the world and she brought in this Tibetan monk. He was really funny because he was a selective mute and he would kind of like, I'd say, glide around the hospital. There was something about him. And he would make little Winnie the Pooh figures and stuff out of plasticine and like all these kind of walk around, giving just smile and give it to the kids. Really lovely guy, you know. And she, like, I found her quite weird, this mum. She kept doing really weird things. Like we'd be in this playgroup center thing and because there was a bit where all the kids could kind of play and she would come up behind Livy and start waving crystals behind her back and Livy could feel them because she would be playing with her back to this woman and she'd sort of start sort of waving behind her as if something was happening, you know. So I knew something was going on. And then this mum gave me like a list of, she was really lovely, she kind of took me under her wing, just gave me a list of all these different homeopathic remedies, supplements, you know. And she was like, if your daughter's going to beat this, she should do all this sort of stuff. So I was like, okay. So I read through it and they were doing also, they had Reiki because interestingly, Reiki is quite used in hospitals now. So, and it was free, you know, so you get these free sessions of Reiki. So that was my first introduction to Reiki. And then it was interesting because, you know, when we were sort of in the playroom, we would get people coming in and offering all these different services, you know. So and I'd never come across this stuff before. But the one thing that I kind of, it's weird because I hope my parents don't listen to this, my parents, because they probably get offended, you know, but they didn't bring me up in the healthiest way when it comes to nutrition. And I think it's because they were really young parents. I mean, they had me at like, my mum was, I think my dad was 18 and my mum was like in her 20s. So they didn't know about, you know, and my upbringing was kind of going from McDonald's to McDonald's when we went on holiday. And my mum would literally feed me and my brother like Coke, chocolate cake and white bread for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know why, like, it's really weird, isn't it? How I just, in the hospital, I instinctively knew that she needed good nutrition as well. Mm. And we had, this is so bizarre, but in the hospital, we had these like nutritionists that would come in and they had like booklets and they'd say, right, so your child's going to lose a lot of weight with the chemotherapy. You need to pump them full of like, you know, sugary foods like chocolate. And this cover of this nutrition, yeah, on the cover of this book that I was given by the nutritionist, there was like a McDonald's. And
oh
there was
my
like,
God.
That doesn't sound right to me, you know? So I kind of, I was a bit of a rebel, I think. And I kind of just thought, no, I'm not going to, I don't think they liked me very much in the hospital because I never did what they were asking me to do. And I said, no, instinctively, I don't like that, you know? So we had a fridge in our hospital room and I would always just load it full of fruit and vegetables. And I had my blender, so I was making her these smoothies every day and they were actually telling me off for it. They were going,
I'm just thinking, you rebel bringing in healthy fruit and vegetables. Like, oh my God, just what the Christ almighty.
This crazy mother that's bringing in these vegetables and fruits, you know? But what was interesting was that all the other kids on the ward, they would always straight away, they'd put this nose tube in them and then feed them. I don't know what was in these drinks. There was some sort of milky drink and you'd have to have it attached to a machine all night, which was stressful enough in itself because some, you know, if say the tube came out of the child's nose, then the machine would start beeping madly in the middle of the night. So it's not really what you want, you know, but I refused to do it. They kept trying to push it on me, to be honest. They kept saying, no, because when she has her really high dose chemotherapy, she won't be able to swallow anything. She'll have ulcers. She just won't be able to eat. And also there were certain medicines that they wanted to put through her nose rather than. So I kept resisting this thing. It just didn't feel, you know, when your mummy instincts, I thought, no. And she would be sitting in this sort of little hall area, just, you know, eating healthy homemade curries and having her smoothies, whatever. And when it came to the high dose chemotherapy, it was over a period of 3 weeks. They give you this high dose and normally kids crash at day one, right? Yeah. She didn't crash till day 10.
Wow.
And there was doctors coming in. We had several doctors coming in with notepads and they were all standing around going, this child is really strange.
And did they listen to you when you said, you know, what you were doing differently?
No. And you know what? Skipping forward, they still don't, because Livy has to go every year to sort of get checkups and stuff like that. And I'll skip forward to this actually because it's relevant. She, because of all this chemo that she had and you know, the radiotherapy, they, when she's 17 now, but at 14, I do these like regular checkups and they said to me, oh, we've done tests. She's in menopause. She'll never have a period. She'll never, you know, get pregnant. And you should tell her that and you should put her straight on HRT. And again, they didn't like me very much because I was rebellious. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And again, instinctively thought, no, I don't want to do it. I want to tackle it with, you know, the things that I've learned, you know. So yeah, I know I've skipped forward, but, you know, I've learned about homeopathy and about cranial sacral therapy and about various other things. So I thought I want to try and do it naturally. So I kind of said, like, give me some time. So I sort of took 6 months and I actually just did a lot of essential oils and homeopathy, all the stuff that I've learned over the years. And it was really crazy, actually, because I actually tuned in on her. I did some cranio on her. I actually learned cranio because of Finn, but I'll get back to that. So I'm skipping around the place.
No, it's great.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it kind of goes in different.
There's a natural flow.
And so what I decided to do was do some cranial sacral therapy on her. And when I tuned in, it was really mad. I literally got a flashback of her entire life. I could just see this, you know, sort of from now to all the way back to when she got her cancer. And it kind of flashed before me. I could even smell things and see things. It was a real spiritual experience. She just conked out fast asleep, didn't know anything about it. But I saw all this stuff. Next day, mommy, I've got my period.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah.
It was really incredible. You know, also my homeopath as well, you know, had prescribed us some stuff. So it was incredible. And she's had a period in line with me every month for the past few years, or 3 years. Now you would think, right, that the doctors would be happy about this, wouldn't you?
When
I went back to them to tell them, and they redid her bloods, because what it is that the follicle stimulating hormone should be between sort of 3 and 9, 7, 9, something like that. Hers had gone up to 98 in the last one that we did from a three, it went back down to three. So instead of being like overjoyed, they were like, well, they were just really negative about it. They're like, oh, this doesn't mean anything. And, you know, you shouldn't get too excited about it. And the doctor would always tap me really patronizing on the knee and sort of say, you know, you really sort of, you ought to face reality, you know, like I was mad, you know, like, you know. And so when I told them all of this stuff and they sent a letter through to me, and they didn't put any of the anecdotal stuff I told them about homeopathy and cranio, and it wasn't in the letter. I got really annoyed and I rang them up. I said, why haven't you put the stuff I told you? And she said, well, it's not scientifically proven and we can't put it in because I said, yeah, but like there's other parents going through the same thing, you know, and they might like to know what another child did because they might not also want to put them straight on HRT because obviously there's, you know, the side effects of HRT and, you know, some people believe it can be linked to cancer, which, you know, I don't want another bloody cancer, you know, so. So it's sad really that unfortunately this alternative stuff is still seen as sort of a bit, you know, something to be a bit dubious about, or, you know.
Thank God you listened to your mother's instinct, because if you hadn't and you'd put her on the HRT, I mean, presumably that'd be it, you know, there'd be no hope. So, you know, and she's a case study, you know, even in science, you know, there's still papers on case studies, like surely that's warrant of interest. And like for me, I'm so curious, I just want to understand, what did you do? How did it work? But not like, I'm pleased to say, actually, just my mum recently was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition, and I decided, she asked me to treat her, and I don't normally treat friends or family, but, you know, I thought, right, I'll treat my mum. And her blood work came back at her follow-up, like amazing, massive improvement. And the doctor, the consultant, asked what had she been doing. And she said, oh, I've been taking homeopathy for my daughter. But he actually asked which one, what remedies, and wrote it in her notes back to the GP. So I was really pleased that actually there was some interest, you know, shown. So
that's really good. I tell you who did show interest, actually, which I was really impressed by, is that one of the side effects from the chemo and radiation she had was that it really has affected her teeth. Her teeth have come out really badly. And on her right side, where she had the lump that had kind of grown, they had to do quite a bit to that and to shrink it. And so one of her teeth had just completely crumbled and fallen. So she will need to have like an implant put at some stage. But she had to have some teeth removed. And when we went, when she was recovering, he said, oh, she's going to need loads of drugs, you know, give her this, that. And I said, oh, no, I don't use any medicine. I haven't done for like, you know, over 10 years. He said, oh, what do you use for pain relief? So I told him the homeopathic remedies that I use. And he was intrigued. And he was actually he started writing it down. He said, that's brilliant. You know, so not all doctors are kind of really skeptical of this stuff, you know, so a lot sort of, you know, are open to it. But the Royal Marsden weren't particularly interested when
it's
told
a shame, them. You know, it can't be used alongside, because I think, you know, particularly like the basic stuff like the Arnica and, you know, the post-op remedies, you don't need really complex constitutional prescribing or anything like that, just those basic day-to-day remedies. It could be such a better place.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like so Liv certainly opened up your mind to the alternative therapies out there.
That was the start of it, but then it wasn't until Finley started to regress into autism that I really started to explore. So what happened with Finley was that he was born at the end of all of the treatment that I've been doing for Livy, and he was induced because I had to time it in a certain way. She was finishing her radiotherapy and I wanted to make sure all of that was done and then sort of have him straight after. So when he was born, he was actually delivered by Ventouse. So his head was a weird shape when he was born, and it worried me again. Mummy instinct, I was thinking that doesn't look right, but the doctor's like, no, it's fine. And so anyway, he was fine. That he was developing fine, and we actually went back to Dubai because I kind of wanted to try and restart the life that we'd sort of like just stopped, you know. And so we went back to Dubai, and there they do the Hep B vaccination quite early. He was 4 months old, and so I took him along to Hep B, and I remember coming back from the doctor and just diarrhea up his back, you know, it was everywhere, you know, it was awful. But again, like, I was really pro-vax, and my parents have always, they almost instillment of fear, you know, like, if you don't do your vaccines, something awful is going to happen to you. And you know, the people, you'll be held responsible for whatever happens to your child. So I was very much like, oh, I must get all the vaccines and stuff, you know. So there was quite a heavy schedule of vaccines in Dubai, actually, you know, that everything had to be given. So I'd done that, and I never thought, to be honest, that the diarrhea, I didn't actually link the two, you know. And then he started to get sicker and sicker, and literally he would wake up screaming in the night, and nothing would console him. And I took him to the doctor, and the doctor kept giving me antibiotics after antibiotics, which I now realize is horrendous for the gut, but I didn't really know. I knew nothing really about health. I was just following, you know, blindly the doctor's advice.
And well, then, like, you do, you trust them. You do.
But you trust in them, and they're the doctor, they know best. And he was getting all these ear infections, and so many antibiotics. I think it was about 10 rounds of antibiotics, nothing was happening. Then they said, oh, you should take a thing called Medicaid, which is like a very strong Calpol. It's now banned, I think, in some countries. So I was, as a mum who was just exhausted, you know, I'd been through a year of Libby's cancer, and she was better, which was brilliant, you know, but there's still that worry that, you know, I was scared, would it come back? And, you know, because they said, if it comes back, there's nothing we can do. That's it. You know, there's nothing else we can do. So I was, do you know what? I was exhausted. I was absolutely stressed out, depressed, all sorts of things, you know. And so I must admit, as a mum, you know, when you're that exhausted, I kind of did used to just give him a lot of Medicaid just to get him to go back to sleep, you know, because he was screaming in pain and stuff, you know. And then we ended up actually coming back to the UK for various reasons. And then he had, so this is where my taxi driver story comes in again. You know, I was thinking about the text. So when we were back, I kind of heard rumors about the MMR vaccine, you know, like you just do, you hear things sort of bandied about. But I was in this black cab taking Finn to get his MMR vaccine. And the black cab said to me, the driver said to me, oh no, you don't want to do that. My daughter, my grandson, he reversed into autism straight after his MMR. And I was like, oh, you know, which scared me, you know, because he said it to me. And I thought, I actually remember saying the words, the worst thing that could happen would be Finn to go reverse into autism because of what's happened with Livy. I don't think I could cope with another major sort of thing, you know, major trauma. And but I went to the doctor, and of course, you know, they said, oh no, the taxi driver's a quack, and you know, you shouldn't listen to stuff like that. It's completely, you know, misproven, and you know, Dr. Wakefield has been discredited and all of that. So they basically said, he's a lunatic. So I didn't listen to the cab driver, and I should have done, which is why I then listened to the cab driver. He told me to leave my job years later. So, so it was horrible, because I did the MMR, and I got, well, my boy went from, he at the time he was about a year and just over a year, something like that. He went from a really sociable boy who was starting to say his words and stuff to a few days later, I just lost him, like literally lost him. You know, he wouldn't turn to his name. He didn't know I was his mum. He didn't know that, you know, his granddad, who'd been really, you know, my dad, he was really close to, didn't recognize him anymore. And he started doing these really weird, but it's really weird. Even though I said that I was worried he'd go into autism, it's like I had a mental block that I didn't actually recognize that this was him regressing to autism. And I didn't see it. And it was actually someone else who had to point it out to me, like, do you think he's on the spectrum? And then I remember going into a pharmacy, and you know, when they have all those books in the pharmacy on the sort of, you know, the turns thing, and it has like depression, anxiety, and this one was autism. And so I looked down the checklist, and I was thinking, flaps all the time, on his tiptoes, does this. And I thought, oh my God, he's got autism, you know. And he literally just disappeared, you know. He just wasn't there anymore, and he would just stand at the TV screen on his tiptoes, flapping with his with his nose against the TV. The other thing he would do is just spin for hours and hours on tables. You know, friends would come around, they're like, what's Finley doing, you know? And so it took me a while to kind of realize, okay, something's seriously wrong here, you know. And then, as you do, because you'll know this, you know, when there's something with your child, you become like a mad researcher. And I was like, and every night I was like there, Google, 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 you know. And then the first thing I discovered for him was homeopathy. So he was having, after the MMR, he literally was having allergic reactions to every food that I put in his mouth. So whether it was grapes, chicken, whatever, his whole face would swell up like just, you know, big sort of swollen cheeks, and his tongue would get stuck between his teeth, and he would just cry, and it was horrible to watch. And the doctor didn't have any suggestions. And then I discovered a book by Amy Lansky, Impossible Cure.
Mate, that was my life-changing book. Like, that book is, I knew when I was reading that, like, yeah, amazing. Yeah, sorry, I'm interrupted, but it is.
No,
yeah.
I know, but like, do you know what I mean? When you find those things that just change your life and you just say, oh, so I read it, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And I started to research about homeopathy, and I went on a one-day homeopathy course with this amazing woman from New Zealand, and I was like, already I was hooked. I was thinking, so I found, I just by chance thought, should I give him some Apis, which obviously is for, you know, bee stings or inflammation. And I thought, well, there is that swelling. And so I put it in his mouth, literally within seconds his swelling came down and he was fine. So what I just did, this is me, like, not being a homeopath, just a mum trying things out, and I put it in every time he had the swelling, and eventually he could eat any food. And like, he wasn't allergic to anything. So then I kind of went down the whole, you know, homeopathy route. And I was actually really jealous when I heard that you and Chan were going to study it, because I was the one who told Chan, you know, I was treating her son, obviously, with cranio. And I was like, I really want to be a homeopath, but I've just spent 10K studying to, you know, become a craniosacral. Yeah. And I haven't got the money, I haven't got the time, you know. So, you know, when I heard about you guys, I was like, I really want to be doing it, you know. And one day I will, one day I'm gonna, you know, I will become a homeopath, I'll study it.
But you're being amazing. And there are shorter courses, actually, by the way. My sister's studying to be a homeopath and nutritionist, and it's a 2-year course.
Oh wow, okay. Yeah,
we can have a conversation offline about that. Don't do it. The world needs more homeopaths.
So yeah, I love, as you can tell, homeopathy is like my major path, you know, passion. And that was one of my first sort of steps really to healing Finny. Then I went down the nutrition route. I started reading. My friend in Portugal that I told you about, it was interesting because she hadn't vaccinated her kids, and she didn't know that I vaccinated Finny, he'd regressed, but she just suddenly sent me something and said, you should really look into this. And it was a book by Jenny McCarthy called Louder Than Words. She's a celebrity who was married to Jim Carrey. I think she was with Jim Carrey, and her son regressed into autism. So I read that and I recognized everything, you know, that had happened to Finny. And I thought, oh my God. So I got all excited. I thought, oh, I'm going to recover him. It's going to take 6 months. Yeah. I was all gung-ho, and this is what I'm going to do. And so I put him on gluten and casein-free diet to start with. And that was like a miracle already. It was such a difference in him. Mm. Like, incredible. And so I started changing the diet. Then craniosacral, this is how I've finally come into craniosacral. I had always worried about his head, and the doctor said, no, you're fine, it won't affect his development. But I just knew there was something. So I Googled and I found this woman who's now one of my best friends, and I've known her for years and years now. And when I went to see her, I thought, this woman is a witch. She had this sort of long grey hair and, you know, and I took Finny along, and I sort of said to her, look, I'm concerned about his head. He's two. So he was two by this time. Yeah. And his head was like really flat, flagocephaly. It was like funny angle. And so she said to me, OK, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to try a session first. I'm going to, because I want you to feel, because it doesn't look like I'm doing much, she said. Yeah. And it might seem a bit odd. And so I was like, OK, you know, so Finley at the time, as I say, didn't know I was his mum, literally didn't know I was his mum. I could have been anyone. Yeah. And it's horrible, you know, that feeling. And he used to line things up. That was his obsession. So he went into the corner of her room, tiny little therapy room in Crystal Palace, and started lining up his pens and cars and whatever there was there.
Yeah.
I lay down and she put her hands on me, and literally it was like, what on earth is going on here? And she just, there's something very spiritual about craniosacral. I mean, with craniosacral therapy, you are working with, you know, the body. So you're working, you know, with the cranium to the spine, you're working with the spine to release restrictions and fluids. And, you know, there's a sort of medical side to it, you know, which you learn, that's why you learn the anatomy and pathology. But there's a spiritual side, which I personally don't think you get from any other therapy, because it kind of, it really gets to it's probably one of the best things to release trauma, I think, you know, that I've ever come across. So when she put her hands on me, I got so emotional, and it was literally like all the emotions of the past year, you know, obviously Livy's cancer, having gone through that. Then I split up with her dad, you know, because of various pressures, and he kind of went off the rails for a bit. So that kind of, you know, affected my, you know, so there were so many things that had gone on, and I don't even think I recognized just how much I was in post-traumatic stress disorder mode. And, you know, I was in fight or flight all the time. At the time, I was really ungrounded and I was constantly having panic attacks. I mean, my parents would just freak out because I was always calling them, I've got a migraine again. I can't see. I can't sleep properly. You know, that was my body not wanting to have the responsibility on my shoulders of being a single mum with these two kids that had major issues, you know, that I needed to sort of be there for. So it was almost like my body didn't want to deal with it and was shutting down. And when she put her hands on me, all of this came out and it was so emotional. And Finley, who was in the corner lining up his stuff, he got up, got on my stomach, went into a fetal position and started to reenact his birth.
Oh my God. Like, this kids are so connected though, aren't they? But that is amazing.
It was. And I was freaked out. I was like, what on earth is going on? And he went from looking really upset and crying to then laughing, to pushing me away, to wanting me to. And it was like he was literally stuck between my legs trying to get out. And I was thinking, this is so weird. Why? Millie then told me later that she thought, like, with clients like that, they either just run away and never come back or they become quiet for life. And she said, I wasn't sure which way it was going to go, you know, the sort of terror in your eyes.
You know? That is just incredible. Like, just.
What is going on? I don't know what's happening. So and this process went on for 3 hours, right? And she was lovely. She actually only charged me for the session, not for by the hour. And so I knew she was preparing and she really wanted me to see this thing through, you know. And the short story is that straight after, within I'd say a week, his head rounded, right? Completely rounded.
And he hadn't even had the session. He just reenacted his session. That is just absolutely amazing.
That's through me. And so, you know, even my mum noticed. And my parents are so sceptical about all the stuff I do. You know, my brother actually, get this, says I con people for a living. He just doesn't get, none of them get it, you know, and they just don't understand it, you know, which is fine. I've kind of come to terms. There was a part of me before that was always trying to prove myself and, you know, this stuff is really good, you know, you'd love it. And, you know, and I just saw, okay, it's just not, you know, for them, you know, but even my mum had to admit, she sort of went, what's happened to Finley's head? Looks a different shape, you know. I was like, wow, you know, and then after that, I think it was a combination of the cranio, the diet, the homeopathy, all of the stuff I was doing. He just started to come back to life, come back to being Finny.
Lovely.
You know, his eye contact came back. He just became more sociable, you know, and it wasn't the mirror. Like, I literally thought, oh, I'm going to recover him in 6 months. You do as a mum, you kind of think you get these ideas. And, you know, some parents do. It's amazing. They have really quick. My Finny's a slow burner. You know, he's 14 now and he's still nowhere near recovered, but he's just come such a long way from what he was, you know. It's just incredible. Some of the things he does now, I would never have dreamt in a million years, you know, the boy that would just spin for 10 hours on a table would ever do, you know. And the interests he has, you know, he likes watching BMX bike racing all of a sudden. Yeah. And you know, he loves all the arts, you know, he loves Mamma Mia and singing stuff and the guitar and, you know, all this stuff that really, and I thought he'd be in Pampers forever, all of that kind of stuff, you know. And I do put it down to all of these alternative. And you know what's mad is, like, I had to find this stuff for myself. And sometimes I compare the two journeys, you know, because with Olivia, you know, like when you've got a child with cancer, the doctors tell you exactly what to do. They give you a protocol and they say, right, they take over, you know, and they say, this is what, you know, these are the steps. And you get a lot of sympathy as well. Everyone goes, oh gosh, your child's got cancer, how awful. And with Finley, it was a completely different thing because you have to do the research, because the doctor was basically, well, that's autism. And yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, so he's got major gut issues. Well, that's autism, you know. And they don't, sadly, they don't look at the medical side of it. They just put it down to autism, you know. And we know that about 90% of kids on the spectrum have gut issues, you know, the gut-brain connection, you know.
You, you've hit the nail on the head, and this is something that really pisses me off about labels. And I've heard this from other friends as well that have got children that have got severe autism. You know, they're just told by their doctors, well, they're autistic. Would you, like one of my friends whose child had cyclical vomiting, was just told, well, it's because they're autistic. I'm sorry, like if you had a neurotypical child and took them to the doctors, would you ever allow them to suffer with gut issues or vomiting? No, the doctors would do something about it. And this whole it's great to be accepting of differences, but this whole neurodiversity movement has actually meant that like these children are just labeled as, well, it's because they're autistic, accept it. You can accept the autistic traits to some extent, but not when it's actually pathology and health issues. That really upsets me that they don't get help for actually health issues.
That's the thing that upsets me the most, you know, because it's true, this sort of thing of like autism is a gift, and, you know, people get very upset. You know, I belong to a charity called Thinking Autism, which used to be called Treating Autism, but they had to change the name, you know, because some people get really upset that you would even think about, you know, treating autism. And actually, you just reminded me of one of my clients who, she came to me because she read my, I have my website set up, and I kept my website really simple. It's just my story. I didn't make it all flash, and I just wanted to sort of tell my story. And that's what the people that come to me as clients, they're the people who can relate to it, because they read it and they cry and they say, oh my God, that's what happened to my child. And that's what they want to, you know, get from me as a mum. They know I understand, you know, I've been through the trauma that they've been through and all of that sort of heartache of the illnesses and stuff. And so this client of mine who, I've, you know, I've been seeing her boy, I don't even see him anymore. He's doing so well. He's immense. He's just literally doing so well. And she recommended me to, she didn't tell me what the group was called, but it was a group for, you know, mums with autistic children. And she said, oh, you should check out Mickey's website and what she's about. And she's done wonders for my son. And apparently they went on my website. And because my website, I talk a lot about treating the symptoms, you know, treating the vagus nerve, for example, which is like a core piece of the autism puzzle. When the vagus nerve is not working properly, it actually causes. So what I didn't realize until I studied my cranial sacral therapy when I did the course was that all this flapping and spinning is all trying to regulate this vagus nerve, you know, and I had no idea about that. So everything that our kids do, it's never just, you know, kind of random, and people try to squash it. Sometimes with some therapies like ABA, they look on the behaviors negatively. They're like, oh, I don't like that. You know, why is he doing that really strange thing? But they're not doing it for no reason. They're doing it to self-soothe. They're doing it because they instinctively, I mean, they're very clever. They know what their bodies need, you know, to feel better, you know. So that's what my Finley was doing. And then I found out about this. So anyway, because on my website, I was talking about treating this, treating that, they said they found it offensive because I wasn't being neurodiverse enough and I wasn't embracing, you know, autism for what it is. I'm thinking, well, hang on a minute. You know, why should autistic kids suffer?
That's it. You know, there's traits of autism where it gets into more the personality or the characteristics or the traits of them. But then there's the medical side, the pathology, the poo smearing or the self-harming or the rage. Like, that's not something that personally I ever would want to embrace. You know, and if that's controversial, so be it. But you're right that there's an innate wisdom, and the body, any symptoms, like what you're saying from the whole more physiological point of view, but as well, like from a homeopathy, we'll look at the symptoms. It's your body's way of expressing its dis-ease. And if we can listen to it, then we will find a solution. But you know what? I think people don't want to accept, like some people do want to sadly give their power away, because it can be easier, can't it, to just go, do you know what? Doctors know best, and I'm just going to do what they say. It's it's a massive shift to go, do you know what? I'm going to try and fix this and sort this out myself. And taking that self responsibility, it's just a massive mind shift, isn't it?
On the head, and especially with what's going on this year, and we'll talk about that later. But you know, I what I'd like to see is more people just taking responsibility for their own health or their children's health, because really, you know, the doctors can do so much, and you know, there are, you know, I'm not slating doctors by any means, you know, I've got a lot of really good friends that I've got lots of clients, you know, that are doctors. And it's interesting as well, like I'll use the example of one my clients, they're doctors, very, very respected in their field, amazing, mm-hmm. amazing doctors, and their son has autism, and I treat him, and they used to laugh at things like homeopathy, you know, they just go, oh, that's silly stuff, you know, and yeah. then when their son regrets,
yeah,
that you try anything, you know, you literally were. And I think it's sad that it has to come to the point where literally you have to experience some major tragedy, you know, trauma or something, or you know, your child getting very, very sick to embrace these other ways of healing, because they've been so squashed by big pharma, you know, everything's about take a pill. You know, I was shocked when I know I'm jumping all over the place, but you know, my Livy, so many kids in her class have been given antidepressants, or you know, and all of these things are described, you know, prescribed so easily, when actually you know, it could be just getting out to nature more, you know, coming off the computer games. You know, we've been sort of really pushed down this route that's not, you know, conducive to our health at all, and it's almost like scorned upon when us mums, we go down these other channels, because we're actually just really desperate to see our kid better, aren't we? You know, yeah. we just want them to thrive.
Yeah.
them to feel well, you know, so we become mad researchers, and we look for anything that's going to help them, and you know, things that other people might think are just so ridiculous, but you know, that have helped. So that's the thing, it's taking accountability and responsibility for your own health, because no one else is going to do it for you, really.
So you're completely right though, I think it's taking that responsibility. And I mean, I used to laugh at people that did homeopathy or you know, just thinking it was just completely implausible. And even when I saw a homeopath, I still walked away thinking, well, that was a load of old mumbo jumbo. And you know, and it was only when I took it and sort of like the universe was giving me a big old slap round the face, I think. And now, like what you said, you know, I wanted to go around telling everyone. When I first discovered homeopathy, I was like almost some evangelistical preacher, like, I've discovered this amazing thing, and people just look at me like I'm crazy. And now I'm like, do you know what, it's your loss if you don't want to know and you want to stick to what you know.
And in fact, you just reminded me as well, my brother, who is obviously very much down the medical route and stuff, and so I got what I think was COVID twice, right? I got it, I think, before it became a big thing, which was like February of 2020, I think it was. I got very ill, you know.
Yeah, that's when I did as well.
And ironically, I was supposed to be at the wellness show doing cranial sacral therapy, and I had to cancel it. And they were really shocked, my fellow cranial sacral therapists, because I'm hardly ever ill. And, you know, for me to cancel something is a big deal, but I was just floored. I really didn't feel well. And then I think I got it again this Christmas, because I had the symptoms. I wouldn't do a test, but because I'm, you know, the tests are bogus anyway, they don't really tell you anything, but you know, you have to go on symptoms, don't you? And I lost my sense of smell for about 10 days. And it was really weird, yeah. So because I normally every day I have this routine of smelling my essential oils, which is another mad thing I'm into. I would smell, and the really strong oils that normally would knock me out, I couldn't smell anything, but I just kept persisting and I kept smelling them, and then eventually it came back, and I was like, phew, because you know, sense of smell is so important. Luckily I didn't lose my sense of taste, or still eating like a but anyway, my brother had heard through my, because I rarely speak to my brother because we're really not close, and you know, I can go so much without, you know, maybe once a year I'll see him at a birthday or something like that. And my parents told him, they said, oh, you know, Mickey got over it really quickly, you know, and that was with my help of my homeopath and and various things. And so he got in touch with me, and I knew what was coming, because they, and I'll tell you the other story in a minute, but they'll come to me and they'll ask my advice, him and his girlfriend, but then when I tell them what it is, they're like, oh, you know. So yeah. he said friends of ours haven't had a sense of smell for like months, and they would do anything to, you know, to get it back. And I said, well, you know, all that weird witchy stuff that I do.
Yeah.
Well, and I even offered, I said, I'll send you my essential oils in the post, or, yeah. you know, because I know you won't be going anywhere near him at the moment, because I mix with far too many people. And he just went, oh, no, you're all right, sis. I think we'll just stick to the doctor's advice if you don't mind.
God. Like,
scene sort of thing. And I just thought, okay, well, suffer then, you know. So there's a part of me that just thinks, why would someone want to cut off their nose to spite their face? And the other example of when that had happened before was his girlfriend, who's really anti anything that I'm into. And she gets very angry if I talk about my clients whose kids regressed after the MMR. She's like, don't be so ridiculous. And she's like, there's no evidence. And if I send it to her, she refuses to look at it. And so she asked me for her brother's son, I think it was at the time, who wasn't sleeping. How did you get Finley to go from, because Finley after the MMR would sleep 4 hours a night at best. You know, and so now for years and years now, since I've been doing homeopathy in cranio, he now sleeps 12 hours, he's, you know, and I know he'll never wake up. Once he goes to sleep, that's it. He's out. You know, he just doesn't wake. And I've still got trauma in my head from the years of the horrendous sleep. But, and so I said to her, she said, what did you do? I said, well, I did homeopathy in cranio. She literally, I could feel the energy hit me in the face, this anger, don't be so ridiculous. And she walked out of the room. And I thought, wow, there's a real, you know, resistance.
Yeah, I've had that. Surely aren't you slightly curious, just slightly tiny bit curious to know how this is incredible. But I think it's because it rocks, it could challenge your entire belief system, couldn't it, and what you know as of being true to the world. So it just
what it is, you know, it's the belief system, and it's what we've been kind of indoctrinated to believe. You know, I mean, there's a real, you know, and I don't want to sit here just slating Big Pharma and going into that debate, but there is this thing of, like, you know, they want us to take these strong medicines or whatever, and that's why all these other things get ridiculed so much. You know, I mean, I've seen of comedians taking a piss out of homeopathy, like, oh, this patient's just come in with a, you know, the legs needs amputated, oh, it's okay, just give him some pulsatilla and so on, we can't, he'll be okay. You know, and there's that sort of ridiculousness of, like, you know, everything has to be integrated, doesn't it? You know, I hugged Libby's surgeon when he took out her cancer that was in her belly. I mean, she's got a big scar across her belly from where he went in and took, and he said, I've got it all, you know, I've taken. So, you know, surgery I have 100% respect for, and I know that, you know, he helped save her life, and you know, but doesn't mean that we have to completely ridicule all these other things that can be used alongside to help the recovery process.
Completely. Right? It's balance and it's integrated. You know, I wouldn't be here without surgery. You know, when I had two of my children, you know, my life was saved by blood transfusions, and neither me or Joy would be here if, you know, I hadn't have had the surgeons there, you know, at the time of her birth. So I am grateful, you know, as well. And I don't slate, you know, it's a balance. It's like, why can't we have both a fully integrated health system where you have the NHS and the regular allopathic medicine alongside.
And, you know, I have friends that say grew up in Germany or France, and that it wasn't seen as weird. You know, your doctor could actually turn around and say, do you know what, I reckon this homeopathic, or they might refer you to a cranial sacral therapist or something like that. And I think it's such a shame with cranial sacral. Reiki is more recognized now in hospitals. You know, people do have it in hospitals. But cranial sacral therapy, which has its origins in osteopathy, which isn't quackery and pseudoscience, you know, for some reason, there's this kind of resistance to get it. And I wish that if someone had told me when Finley had been born and had this really bad flat head from the ventouse, if they'd said, go in and do cranial straight away, I reckon that there would have been a lot, you know, he would have improved much quicker. You know, I waited till he was two. And even at two, it made a massive difference. But, you know, it'd be so amazing if, like, as soon as a baby was born, the midwife or someone would say, do you know what, there was a really traumatic birth here, maybe you should go and see a cranial sacral therapist, you know, because I get babies that come to me and I treat a lot of babies. And, you know, sometimes babies are actually the best to treat because they haven't got too many layers yet. Yeah. Of, you know, sort of, so if you can get in there quickly, and I love seeing the little teeny tiny ones, you know, they're like a few weeks old or whatever. Aww. And the mum will come exhausted and go, oh, my baby's got colic and it's not sleeping, whatever. And you can just tune in. And I had one baby just as an example, and she came in and she literally, oh, bless her, she was just a ball of scream, and she was just scream. Oh, I felt so bad. I was like, oh God, this baby. So I picked up the baby and tuned in, and then I got this vision. In cranio, you sometimes get visions, you know, you just see something. And I saw her, like, just furiously, her feet kind of paddling away like this mad boat, that, like, you know, the propellers trying to get out of this thing. And I saw the birth, I could see her, like, struggling to get out, and you know, it was awful. Then suddenly I saw this sailboat, and she kind of sailed off into the, you know, I got this beautiful visual of going from frantic to sailing, and the crying stopped, and she just suddenly went all like limp and like happy and relaxed, and that was it. She only needed one treatment, and the mum sort of was like, oh my God, like it's just completely different. You know, some babies might need 2-3 or whatever, but it's like if you can calm that nervous system and release the trauma that they had at birth, then you know, and kids react in some really crazy, you get babies that have been really placid, suddenly start getting really angry, and literally they're sort of almost shouting and waving their fists and screaming. And sometimes it's, do you know what, I'm quite grateful that cranio is so light touch, that you know, I'm not doing chiropractic, I'm not doing adjustments where, like, literally I think some parents might actually run from the room, you know, and save their child because it looks like I'm torturing them or something. So, but I'm like, look, I'm not touching your child, my hands are, you know, hovering around it, so they can see I'm doing something which is so non-invasive and light touch, and so I couldn't possibly be harming their baby, but the baby just kicks off and starts screaming, and they need to go through that sometimes, they need to almost release the anger or whatever fears or anger or emotions they had at the birth, because let's face it, birth can be quite traumatic, you know, something that's supposed to be quite natural, you know, creates all sorts. So, you know, cranio is really good for babies, you know, and the fertility thing as well is like at the moment, because of Libby, it's weird, you know, the universe brings you, so it brings me clients that I've had a lot of clients, you know, with kids on the spectrum, and then I get the fertility ones. And someone came to me and she'd had 6 rounds of IVF, she's 43, and she really wanted to have a child. This was her last resort. Cranio is always someone's last resort, or homeopathy, whatever. And she came to me, she was like, I really, you know, this is my last ditch attempt. And so anyway, I tuned in her, she got pregnant. The next time she came to see me, she was like, I'm pregnant.
That's and amazing.
And years and years. And then what, she was so nervous because she was scared that she would lose, you know, because she was very, she'd always wanted this baby. So she literally came to me every week, and I'd calm her nervous system down and make her feel relaxed. And so she got cranio all the way through. And what I've noticed with someone who's had cranio like all the way through the pregnancy, their babies are just chilled. They just sleep well. They're different to normal. And I wish I'd known about it, because my 2 were a nightmare, literally. Like Livy, when she was a baby, would just scream all night, never slept, always ungrounded. So if I'd known about this, and when I did my course, I think about 6 people on my cranio course got pregnant during the 2 years that we were on the course. So they were being worked on by, you know, we'd always do, you know, practicals in the weekends, and their babies were all really chilled as well.
It's funny you said, there's a couple of people when I was studying that have babies throughout the course, and they had such chilled out kids, like babies. They bring them into clinic, and I'd be like, oh my God, they were just so chilled.
Such a shame that that isn't a gen, you know, why can't cranial sacral therapy just be the known thing? You know, you have your baby, your baby's had trauma, has had a head injury, whatever it might be, take them to see a cranial sacral therapy, and you could sort it out in a few sessions at the beginning, rather than, you know, when they're maybe a bit older. Then it's sometimes it's harder the older they get, you know, to sort of correct things, and you know, so the earlier you can get in, the better. And it's just a shame that we're not told things like that, you know. And I wish I'd know, you know, like I had a very stressful, you know, baby in Livy. She was just always, she just, maybe it was because the cancer, you know, was already growing in her or something, but she was just so restless, you know, and that's why I was always just a complete state as a mum, you know. I never got any sleep, and I think I, you know, now in my profession, you know, I get clients coming in all the time that, you know, sleep is a big thing, anxiety is a big thing, you know, my child's not sleeping. And if you can take someone's child from sleeping say 3-4 hours a night to, you know, sleeping properly, that's just, it's a life changer. It's literally a game changer.
You know? Yeah, you can't, when you're sleep deprived, I mean, that is why they use it as torture, isn't it? It is just like you can't function. And just to be able to sleep as a mum, have a baby that sleeps, oh my God, like what a difference does that make?
Can you, when you've not had that sleep? And so now I get a lot of people coming to me from word of mouth for people who want to get pregnant. So far I've got 100% track record.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then what's lovely then is I get to meet the baby and I get to work with the child, and normally they don't need many, it's just that they like to have a check-in session with the baby, and then maybe see them at year two, you know, if they're going through a stressful time at school, whatever. But you kind of, what I love about what I do is pretty much all my clients, not all of them, but I've kind of become like, last night I was working till really late with some Mauritian family, and I said, I feel like I'm part of your family, because they like, they make me a cup of tea, and I get very integrated into people's lives, because they see it as, you know, something that's helping their children to progress and grow. And it's lovely, because I see the progress, and that's what I like, is, you know, just being part of the journey of, you know, their route back to health, really, you know, because that's, we've all got the capability to do it. You know, like, I'm not a magician. I'm not coming in and doing anything special. All I'm doing is I'm listening. So with Crania, what we're trained to do is we tune in and we listen to the body. And the body tells a story. There's a book written, The Body Tells a Story, you know, so you listen to what that body wants to tell you. And just feeling heard is just so powerful, you know. Mm. And once the body feels heard, then it can start to repair itself. And it's got this, instinctive way of just kind of going back to health, you know, and all it needs is that little, you know, helping hand to do that, you know. And also, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, things coming into my head, but you don't have to be a believer either, because my favorite clients are the really skeptical, mm-hmm. usually the men, actually. They've been sent by their wife. I had one, he's written a really nice testimony on my website, actually, but this woman came to see me and she was suffering from anxiety and stress. And then she said, I'm going to send my husband to you, but he's going to be really skeptical and he won't really want to do it and stuff. So he came and he's in his 60s and had been in the army and, you know, really high up in the army. And I said, oh, you know, I do my case study. I said, oh, you know, what can I help you with? And any issues? And he was like, no, nothing. I'm just going to here to appease the wife. And, you know, she'll divorce me. So he lay down and I tuned in on him and I literally couldn't breathe. I just felt this because I kind of become the person, you know, I feel it in myself. Someone's got an issue somewhere, I'll feel it. Sometimes it's quite hard, you know, this transference, because and sometimes it takes me a while to shift it after I've seen a client and I know it's not my stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, I need to get rid of this kind of heavy feeling. And I couldn't breathe, and I was literally, and I felt like I needed to just relieve something in his rib cage and in his lungs. And so after, when we finished the session, I said, blimey, I said, what is going on? And he was really shocked that I was able to diagnose that what he had was like a really rare form of arthritis in the rib cage. Oh, and it felt like his heart and his lungs were actually trapped in a cage, you know, and everything was sort of really tight. And he said, the doctors said, I'll never breathe properly again. And I was like, rubbish. I was like, and he went from not really just appeasing his wife to only do one session to he started coming, and they eventually would move back to the States. But he started coming to me regularly because he couldn't believe that one, I diagnosed it, he hadn't told me about it. Mm. You know, it's amazing that you can kind of feel it, you know, and they haven't even said anything about it. And then he said, also, you made it better. And it's mad because sometimes these physical things can be psychological, you know, they come from a psychological thing. So he'd had some issues when he was a kid growing up and very oppressive type way he was brought up. And you don't share your feelings, mm-hmm. you know, the army as well. Everything's like you keep things close to your chest. And it was one of the reasons why he wasn't getting on so well with his wife, because he wasn't expressing, you know, his emotions and stuff. And it literally felt like there was something on his chest, you know, that was kind of stifling him and, mm-hmm. and keeping him stuck. And look what happened. It turned into a pathology.
That's amazing. And yes, the mind-body connection, I think, is appreciated. Yeah. Even in conventional medicine, we doctors do talk more about stress and it's not good for your health, you know, in a much more generic way. But I think there is that sort of very much more widely accepted view that obviously emotional issues can lead to physical issues. But one thing I'm interested in, do you... like it sounds like that you have sort of natural healing gifts to be able to do that and to get this picture. Is it something like, can anyone learn if you're interested in it? Or is it something, do you have to have that sort of innate healing ability to make a good therapist?
Yeah, I think anyone can learn it for sure. I mean, to be honest, like Reiki is what I learned first, because when I went to see Millie, you know, who obviously treated Finley and we had that amazing session, she actually said to me, I feel you're going to be doing this for a living in the future. And I laughed. I said, don't be so ridiculous. You know, my background is marketing PR and I can't see myself doing this. You know, she was like, yes, you will. You know, and I was so blown up. I had a passion for it, but I know people who have gone on a, say, a Reiki course, you know, because you can do Reiki in a day, you do Reiki one, you can learn it in a day, and you will. If you do a Reiki course, what they do is they attune you to the energy, so you'll always be able to turn that Reiki energy on, and you can put your hands on someone and you'll feel heat and you'll feel, but some people just don't take to it, they're not particularly inspired by it, they don't have the passion for it, so they might learn it but never use it. I just fell in love with it. So I literally, there's not been a day since I learned it in 2008 was my first course. And I just use it every day, literally, you know, whether it's on myself, my kids, my clients, whatever. So you kind of, I think it's a case of, like with anything in life, if you've got a passion for something and you really get into it and you really believe, you know, you see the benefits of it and you love it so much, and it's practice, isn't it? Practice makes perfect. There could be an element of having that innate thing in you that you just, you know, because every healer's different, you know, and someone, for example, you know, I learned cranial sacral therapy and I had a, you know, traditional way of learning it in a classroom. I've kind of taken it and I've made it my own. I've made it Mickey's therapy, you know, and I think that's important as well, that you know, you can learn the basics of it. You can learn the theory, but then putting it in practice and having that. I think clients that come to me, for example, the autism parents, they come because they see my experience, you know, and they feel my passion for it. And I've been through it myself. Whereas they might, you know, I had a client in, well, I still have a client in Birmingham who I was able to go and do hands-on with, but then because it's so far and it was tiring me out, you know, do you know what? You might want to find someone local. So they did, and they only used her once, and they were like, no, she's not you, you know, which was lovely. You know, it's nice to hear that from a client, but now I do distant with them because they didn't realize you could do distant healing, you know. So I kind of, over the first lockdown, you know, I explained, you know, and they were like, really, you can do that? And it actually works just as well, if not better, you know. But yeah, I think everybody's got, I think you do have something in you that maybe might make you a better therapist than someone who hasn't got. And I think it's passion. I think it's passion and the love for what you're doing. Like with anything, right? Any job you do, if you put your heart and soul into it, rather than, you know, I think then you will excel at it and you will do well, you know?
Yeah, and I think maybe you get called, like the universe just push you into the path you're meant to. Yeah,
100%. I certainly never dreamed that, you know, I'd be doing this for a living ever, you know. I mean, I've always been the PR marketing kind of route, you know. It's good that I did PR marketing because I'm quite good at now sort of promoting myself, you know. I mean, I don't promote myself in anything else, and that I think people just see my passion and they see how much I help families and how much it helped me, and that therefore I kind of, you know, by osmosis they sort of feel that.
Oh, it definitely comes through, your passion, without a doubt. Mick, I'm really conscious of time actually, so I just wanted to ask a couple of other questions, if that's all right. It's been so lovely to chat. So what, for people that do want to learn more, like where can they find out more information about you and your, can you tell people your website and whether you've got social media presence, you know, how they can find out more, if there's any books that they could read or anything like that at all?
Well, I've got a website, mickyetterayhealing.com, so they can go to that, and I've put quite a lot of stuff on there. I've got sections, especially for the autism, I've got links to things that I think are interesting, you know, like the connection with the vagus nerve and stuff like that. And the cranio, you know, I'd probably go to the Cranial Sacral Therapy Association website, because that's a really good starting point. It's also got links to practitioners in their area, and it will explain, there's a lot of videos on there, and my website actually has got videos. Like, for example, I've got a video that my clients very kindly allowed me to film.
They
four twins, which cause all sorts of problems, and so, you know, they explain how cranio helped them. There's video, I'm part of the PR committee for Cranial Sacral Therapy Association, and so we do videos on, say, how it helped someone with meningitis. So we do a lot of case studies and videos, and there's a video actually of me, like, very bad acting because I was quite embarrassed, I hate being on camera. And we did it because we wanted to, you know, cranial sacral therapy isn't actually that well known, you know, it's still very unknown. You know, if you say it to someone, people can't pronounce it for a start. You know, most people have heard of Reiki, but cranio, they haven't. So every year, actually, for the last few years, we've been doing a cranial sacral awareness day. You know, you get all these awareness days and stuff. So we did one where we hired out a place in Soho, and someone who had connections with the radio went on radio and said, you know, come and try it out. And
oh, wow,
people were coming. been thinking they were going to get a massage and then being quite shocked at what actually happened in the half an hour session they had. You know, they might end up crying because, you know, they just got over their dad's death and then all this stuff. And so, you know, there's quite a lot of information out there. I'd say probably the best start would be Craniosacral Therapy Association website. Mm-hmm. And then Reiki, you know, there's so much on Reiki, there's so many books on Reiki and stuff like that, but yeah, my website, sort of, I've got quite a lot of information on there, and I've got Instagram, I've got my page on Facebook, Mickey Ettery, Health in the City, because I have a clinic that I work out in the city, and then I work from home as well, so there's quite a lot of information on there. I just post just various things about the therapy and you know, testimonials, how it's helped my clients and that kind of thing, you know.
Well, I'll put a link to your website on the podcast, so anyone that's listening, they can just go there to see your website link. Final question that I'd like to ask everyone, bit of a sort of random one, but what would be your wish for humanity right now, if you could wish anything?
That's a big question.
It is, isn't it?
There's so much I want. I think we're at a precipice right now. I think we're literally seeing two different sort of differing routes that humanity is going down. You know, it's almost like there's a fork in the road, and there's the one side which is like the highly tech side, you know, the sort of genetically modified route of kind of complete surveillance and control, and you know, this regularly sort of infiltrated with AI nanotech, and you know, like this kind of everybody on their phones, and you know, everything's kind of going very fast. And then there's the other side, which is the spiritual, heart-centered side, you know, the soul awakening. And I think more and more of us, you know, are awakening. I think it's a really important time in history. I think we are going through a mass awakening, you know, a sort of a change in consciousness from this, people talk about 3D to 5D, you know, this really dense kind of low vibration reality which we're in. And this has never been highlighted more so in the last year since all the COVID stuff came out, you know. But I think that if, you know, what I'd like is for people to step out of their mind and into their heart, and to do more stuff like, you know, soul searching, meditating, cranial sacral therapy. All of these things will take you to be more in your heart than in your mind. And I want people to, you know, what we were saying before, just take ownership for their health, you know, because if you connect with your soul and you think for yourself, no one will be able to lie to you or fool you about your health. You know, you'll know exactly what's right for your health and what's not, you know, and it's having that intuition to kind of just live in, I choose the route of love and freedom versus fear and control, you know, and I think that was really evident at the march that I was at the weekend, you know, where, you know, people are saying anywhere between 250,000 and a million, there's been figures sort of thrown out at, you know, randomly, but you know, there was a lot of people that turned up that were not happy with, say, you know, enforced vaccinations or vaccine passports or whatever. You know, I think that we shouldn't be controlled to that level. You know, we should have the, you know, the autonomy to sort of choose our own health route and not be forced, you know, down the certain, you know, and if we choose, why, if we've chosen to live healthily, we eat well, we meditate, we, you know, we connect with our soul, we take these alternative things that keep us healthy, and we know what's best for us, why are we being coerced?
There should be all. Yeah, there should always be freedom of choice when it comes to your body. Like, there always should be a choice.
But I think, you know, and I think that a lot of people, because they're maybe really caught, you know, I was on the tube the other day and I was looking at everyone masked up on their phones, no one smiling, everybody, you know, eyes down, no. I want us to start hugging again, kissing, you know, being human. So that's what I want for humanity. I want us to stay human and not turn into robots, not go down the end. Yeah.
Completely. Oh, thank you, Mickey, so, so much. It's been lovely to chat to you. That.